All right, so the tone of this film is slightly insane.
Yeah.
And also hardwired into film noir, one of my favorite genres of all time.
Right, right.
And set in a very particular and kind of semi-sleazy period of L.A.'s underbelly.
Right.
How do you wrestle all of those things together when you're working with Shane Black on a film like this?
You know, it didn't start this way. It kind of started more of a noir piece. You know, Shane and I read a lot of these sort of 70s noir books that we love. Obscure ones, weird ones, you know, that just don't, you got to go find them. You got to go hunt them down if they still are in print and they kind of fall apart in your hands. But so we had this script that was maybe a little, it was hopefully fun and funny, but it was maybe a little more of a noir piece. And we did a casting to try to find the female Anne Gowrie, who we ended up with, was amazing. And Ryan was there for that, to meet with all the girls. Everybody we were auditioning, he was there to sort of talk to them. And so we got to see Ryan play the part before, you know, months before we were out there. And he just was funner, you know, funner than the script, I think. And he brought a sense of humor that after that day, like, oh, great, we got Anne Gowrie, she's amazing. But Shane and I are both like, God, Ryan's funnier than, you know, than the script is, in a way. And so we thought, well, we should kind of evolve this, maybe. And we, you know, we did little things. And then we had the first table read. And he, once again, had pushed it even further. And Shane and I again got together and said, God, we got to start writing around this stuff as it happens. And then first couple days of shooting, I'm like, God, he's Peter Sellers. You know, he's not, we thought Drive or something like that. You know, he's like noir, cool. But he brought so much humor that the script kind of evolved around that. And you know, Russell immediately picked up on it and sort of played opposite him so well that frequently we were like, okay, we got to change the scene tomorrow because it's, you know, it's based on what we know about the character now, based on what we know Ryan and Russell can do. We've got to do more here. You know, we've got to try harder. So we would end up, you know, evolving the script and evolving it in sort of a more humorous, fun direction. It's not like we set out to be this exact movie, but as it was happening, we're like, wow, this is a better movie. We like this. So, I mean, that's the short answer, or not that short.
Do you have any examples? Sorry, one last follow-up. Do you have any examples of some of the books that inspired you originally?
Sure. There's 12 books by a guy named Ralph Dennis, and they're called the Hard Man books. And they were all written in the 70s. They take place in Atlanta, and they're about a guy named, you know, Jim Hardman and his buddy, who's an ex-football player, whose name is Hump. And so Hard Man and Hump go around and solve crimes, but not, they don't, you know, they drink, they don't do anything really positive in a long way. There's a book where Hump goes to a pimp's ball and gets trapped there for most of the book. And it's just like people are trying to rob the pimp's ball. And meanwhile, Hardman's like at some kind of barbecue place for half the book. I mean, it's bizarre stuff, but really, really great. And we had kind of, Shane and I both kind of fallen in love with this stuff. And there's not really a big fandom for it, so it's hard to find other people who are into it. But it really influenced a lot, I think. That and maybe a lot of Rockford Files. Mm-hmm. You know, especially the first season of Rockford Files. And there's a lot of little references to Rockford Files in the movie. He keeps his gun in the cookie jar, which is a Rockford Files thing, and his ad is very much like the ad from Rockford Files, the Yellow Pages ad, which, yeah, you know, always those. In the 70s, they had these, I don't know why, they had these line drawings of people smiling, you know, for whatever their, you know, whatever it was, pool cleaning, whatever it was, there was a line drawing of a guy smiling, so we got one of those.
So what is it about the 70s that speaks to you? And was there something they told you, oh, that doesn't exist anymore, so you can't do that, that you had to take out?
I was very young, but I grew up in L.A. in the 70s. And I had asthma, and I couldn't leave the house half the time when I was a little kid because it was like stage 4 smog alerts. And then years later, I found out that there was this thing about the catalytic converter. And everybody's here seen the movie?
Yeah.
Okay, so
yeah.
So it is true that the catalytic converter was this thing that the car company said to the U.S. government, hey, let us take care of this. We'll figure out this smog thing, don't worry. And they just didn't. You know, they just kind of, people will go, hey, I got an idea, we could do this. And like, oh, great. And they take that and put it in a file because they didn't want to pay the extra money to do this. And when it was discovered, Los Angeles sued them and said, look, you guys are suppressing this thing that we need. You know, there's stage 4 smog. So I always imagined my childhood could have been so much better had these guys actually done what they were supposed to do.
So you got your revenge.
So, yeah. So it just seemed like a fun MacGuffin. So that's, you know, that was, a lot of that is my memories of Los Angeles. And
you know, and the big car companies are the ones that got rid of the mass transit in Los Angeles.
Yeah, yeah, and that's a MacGuffin in Roger Rabbit.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
That which I thought was neat, and I thought the water story in Chinatown, you know, all of that, and we just thought, you know, we're in that tradition. I wonder if we can find a real MacGuffin like those that makes sense, and that's where we ended up.
But was there something you couldn't do because it doesn't exist anymore?
No, there's the opposite, because when we wrote the script, we didn't initially set it in the 70s. So everybody was on their cell phones and, like, checking the internet, and what are we going to do? And then you remove all of that, and you're like, oh, he can't just call him on the cell phone, because he's, now they can't communicate. You know, it becomes a different set of problems, and so we actually had the opposite, which was, God, we got to take all this technology away and make it, you know, move quickly. And I kind of like a lot of those older tricks that people had done, and we didn't get to work a lot of them in the film, but I always remember there's this one where old school guys would go into someone's house to try to figure out what they were doing, and they'd take their phone book, you know, because everybody had a phone book, and they would just let go and drop it, and it would open to a page, and then they'd look at that page to see if they were using that page frequently. You know, that kind of old school thing, and we tried to work that stuff in as best we could, but...
Yeah. You know, Sue Grafton's novels are still set in the 80s, so they don't have... her detective, Kinsey, doesn't get to use all the technology.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love stuff like that.
Can you talk about working with Shane Black, doing a profile of him? So I'm just curious how you work together. How would you describe his style?
He has a really harsh way of writing screenplays. A lot of people kind of outline and get an idea. And what Shane would do is... he would go into a room and he would say, okay, I'm going to write today. And he would write a scene. And the scene would take place somewhere, you know, in a bar with some guys. And then he'd go, oh, good scene, put it down, and he'd go home. And he'd come back the next day and he'd write another scene that had nothing to do with the first scene. Just whatever he wanted to write that day. He'd go, okay, good. And he'd put it on the stack. And then he'd come back a month and a half later, and he has 30 scenes. And he'd read them all. And he'd go, okay, well... these suck, but you know, these three are pretty good, and it's almost like they're in the same movie. Like, if I turn this girl into a guy and I do this, this could almost be three scenes from a movie. So he takes the other 30 scenes and he throws them in the trash and he goes, okay, now I'm writing this movie. And he starts trying to write things in that. And it's a torturous process that produces lots of really great scenes. And I think my job, I felt, was to try to meet him halfway, to try to do what he does, but also to bring a little more, like, we've got to get this done as quick as possible, so we can't do this. So I bring a little more, you know, structure to it. So,
otherwise known as a plot?
Well, no, it's not even the plot, because he gets a plot. It's just in advancing, all right, we know we're making this kind of movie, and we know it's going to go these directions, and we know we have this MacGuffin, which is a lot of things he doesn't necessarily know when he sets out to write. So we split up at the very beginning, and he said, look, you write a character, and I'll write a character, and we'll see where it goes. So I wrote an introduction for Healy, and he wrote an introduction for March, and then we traded. And we just kind of kept going back and forth for a while. And then when we hit about the end of the first act or somewhere around there, we discussed all the stuff. And we said, okay, now what are we doing? And we actually plotted ahead, which is something he doesn't often do, until he gets, you know, late in the game. And then he's got all these scenes and he's trying to make them all fit. And so it was interesting. It was good. I was intentionally trying to get to come to him in terms of how that works and sort of, you know, do it the Shane Black style, you know.
So since you said you grew up here in L.A., so how much of the film was actually done here in L.A.?
I don't know exactly. Half, maybe? It's hard to say because when you shoot, you know, sometimes you're shooting a bunch of stuff in a day. You know, we shot a lot here in L.A. and it was really fun to go to all the places that LA hasn't knocked down yet, that were from the 70s, and go, wow, we're really here, we're these places. And that was another thing, is that, you know, a lot of the LA stuff, we tried to write stuff that we knew still existed, so you could go there and actually film there. So, yeah, we tried to get as much of LA there, you know, in there as possible. Atlanta's a great substitute in a lot of ways, and so just, you know, depending on the schedule, it's fairly easy to, you know, shoot a lot of sets and things in Atlanta and shoot some exteriors in Atlanta that work perfectly and then come back to L.A. and get a lot of L.A. production value, which I think we did. I like the look.
There were some rumors on the internet, like, back way, like, a year ago, that the script was changed. Like, they said that Russell Crowe's character was Ryan Gosling's character and they mix in the end.
No, you know, it was... We knew right off the bat who they were playing, but everybody... I think people had read an early draft of the script, and we call the ages of the character.
And so
they're like, well, then obviously, you know, March is the older character, and Haley's the younger character. And I don't even remember, you know, that wasn't super... Like, when you're writing a script, you say, he's 43 years old, but, you know, good luck. Maybe he's 43 years old. It depends on who you get. So, no, we didn't switch them at all. It was always intended that Russell was Healy and Ryan was March.
I walked out of the screening room and I went, sequel? Are you up for that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was really honestly just an incredible lot of fun to do this movie. And I understand that's not always the case, but this was just a total blast. And I really love the 70s aesthetic. And Shane and I have talked about it a little bit. We'd love to do something in the 80s, you know, because this is 77, 78, and... You know, give it a couple of years, they could be in the 80s, and we can do all that stuff, which is truly my childhood. You know, like, I actually remember the 80s better, so.
When you were writing the script, there was a scene, like, that you said, wow, this is going to be, like, a problem to shoot or something. You know, like, when you were writing, which was the scene that you believed that was the...
Well, we have this whole thing that takes place at a car show in the 70s, and so you're like, okay, how many... You know, how are we going to get all these old cars and then we're going to blow them all up and then there's going to be all these people and it has to be a venue and it's got to look like a big gala and, you know, you need all the hundreds and hundreds of extras in 70s clothes. And we're like, this isn't the small film that we were setting out to do. This is a bigger film than we thought it was. And that was a sequence that we're like, God, how are we going to, you know. But it actually, that part, it turned out, you know, that people are so good at it now, technically, they're just like, oh, no problem, we'll just do this and this and this. And you look, oh, that looks great, you know.
Because no way people would let you blow up those classic cars.
We did blow up one of those on a rotating pedestal. We actually just blew it up there, and it looks pretty good.
And
it
felt
fun.
Good.
Yeah, it felt great. That was fun.
Were you on the set a lot?
Yeah, I was pretty much there every day.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because obviously, in some cases of director to screenwriter relationships, it ends on day one. But obviously you have a different kind of relationship.
I have a bonus with that, in that, you know, he and I are really good friends, and that's you know, great for me. I think also it's in some cases not so great, because usually, you know, a writer comes in and says something and they're like, oh, great idea, and then when he leaves the room they're like, okay, we're not doing. But then I'll come in and say something, and Shane goes, you're an idiot. What is this? This is dumb. So being his friend has its benefits, and it's
blunt.
Yeah, it is blunt edge. Yeah.
This was your first feature that was
produced,
right?
Yeah.
Did you feel it's kind of a departure for both lead actors in a way from what they're known for. Did you feel a bit of pressure, you know, the pressure of their careers weighing down on you when you were... when you were writing the lines that they'd eventually be saying?
I really wanted Ryan and Russell to like what we were doing along the way. So yeah, I wanted to be sure that they were getting what they needed. Mm-hmm. You know, they're actually great improvisers, they're great at this stuff, but you want to give them as much as you can so they're happy with how you did it. So I think there's a lot of pressure on myself not to give them some duds and have them have to fix it up all the time. I mean, there was that, but I don't really think about anybody's career. I'm just worried about the piece, like, is it good and is it working, that kind of thing.
And how did you get a good voice for the young girl, because neither of you are a young girl?
I don't know. We just liked the idea that she was kind of the mature, innocent one, and they were idiots. So we were good at them, and we pictured her more like, what if your mom came in while you were doing this? And, you know.
Are you and Shane, like, buddies like those guys?
Yeah. I mean, we are. We're really good friends, and I've known him for a very, very long time. He doesn't actually break my arm or anything on a regular basis, but it feels that way sometimes. But yeah, no, we're really good friends. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks very much, guys.
Thanks for the film, too.
All right. Thanks.
That was beautiful. Cheers.